Hey everyone, welcome back to the Thrillogy podcast. My name's Cameron and I'm here with my two incredible co-hosts,
Krista
and Morgan.
This is officially our fourth episode of the Thrillogy podcast. And honestly, guys, I can't believe it. It feels like we just released our first episode and it's been such an exciting and fun journey. And I want to thank all of our listeners because without you guys, it really wouldn't have been possible. I also want to give a huge shout out and thank you to everybody who has subscribed, reviewed, and shared our podcast with friends and family. It really does help us out and we appreciate it so, so much. Now, while I'm sure we could all certainly get very emotional, thanks to all of our support, I know that you guys are here for your weekly dose of Thrillogy. So, without further ado, let's jump into today's case, the case of the 1987 Viking Sally murder. In 1987, a couple, Klaus Scheckel and Bettina Taxis, and their friend Thomas Schmid from West Germany decided to tour the beautiful Nordic countries during the summer. And honestly, I can't blame them. It's the perfect time to visit Europe's Nordic countries. Not too hot, not too cold, and there's so many beautiful sights to be seen. Now, these three friends had spent all spring and summer saving money, planning their trip, and they were young, in their early 20s. Their original plan was to travel by rail from West Germany to Stockholm, Sweden, and then cross over into Finland on ferry, visit the Ruisrock, which is the second oldest rock festival in Europe, and eventually make their way up to Lapland with the goal of returning home along the south coast of Norway. On July 27th, 1987, at about 10 p.m., the three friends boarded the Viking Sally cruise ship in Stockholm's port to make their way to Turku, Finland. The plan was to arrive at 8 a.m. the following morning and begin their journey into the northern part of the country. Up until the point where Klaus, Bettina, and Thomas had boarded the ship, their trip was going well. They had sent multiple postcards and even made some phone calls home to ensure their family of their well-being. And honestly, even before boarding the ship, everything seemed normal. Klaus and Bettina, both being incredibly sociable, they quickly started chatting with other passengers and even making friends. Now, like I said before, these three were all young travelers in their early 20s and, as you can probably imagine, didn't have a ton of money to spend. So, rather than booking a suite or some sort of room on the ship, the three friends decided to rough it for the evening and basically just make themselves comfortable wherever. Thomas was starting to get a little tired, and it's also believed that he may have wanted to give the couple some privacy. So, while Klaus and Bettina wanted to watch the sunrise from the top of the ship, Thomas decided to try and get a bit of shut-eye. The group separated and Klaus and Bettina moved to the top of the ship while Thomas slept indoors with one of his sleeping bags. Now, like I mentioned, Klaus and Bettina, they wanted to watch the sunrise, so they ended up going to the helicopter pad of the ship, and they weren't alone there either. There were many other passengers drinking, talking, and taking in the beautiful sights and scenery because this was the highest point of the ship. At one point, Klaus had even started chatting with another passenger, Tauno, who was fluent in German and shared one of Klaus's biggest interests, cars. They exchanged information, chatted for a while, and even planned to go to the car deck of the ship and look at Tau's cargo of car parts in the morning. Between Klaus and Bettina, they started referring to Tauno as the Fun Finn. As the night went on, Klaus and Bettina decided that they should try to get at least some sleep before the sunrise. But in order to secure the best sunrise location, they toughed it out in the dark and cold upper deck, despite the fact that the other passengers had left. While Klaus and Bettina found their sleeping spot, the ship started to become pretty quiet and peaceful. The onboard restaurants and bars were either closed or just closing, just as they normally would around this time, 3 a.m. Now, on the ship, there were also some young Danish scouts, similar to what we might think of as the Boy Scouts. Being young, the party didn't stop for them, and they continued to roam the boat even after the bars and restaurants had closed for the night, and some actually even reported that they were causing a little bit of a disturbance. Eventually, at around 3:45 a.m., the young scouts made their way to the upper deck where Klaus and Bettina had made their makeshift sleep quarters. At first glance, the scouts noticed that there were no other people on the deck, but that's when they saw two people who looked to be struggling to stand up near the air vents. Thanks to the Finnish news site YLE, we actually have an approximate photo of where the couple was found. This isn't a graphic photo, and it's really simply just a reconstruction. If you're curious and you want to see that photo along with any of the other photos from our case, check out this episode's blog post on thrillogypodcast.com. Now, these boys just figured they were drunk or on drugs, but after they watched the two people try to stand up multiple times, one of the Boy Scouts decided to walk over and see if they needed any help. When he approached the couple, he quickly realized their faces were covered in blood and something had gone incredibly wrong. Two of the boys stayed with the couple while the other ran to get security and alert them of what they had found. This would soon become one of the Finnish police's largest investigative operations. You may have guessed it by now, but as soon as the security officer arrived at the scene, he identified the couple as Klaus and Bettina. The young couple was severely injured, and security knew that this must have been a crime right away due to their incoherent speech and severe head trauma that the couple had endured. With the help of the other crew members, the security guard eventually helped both Klaus and Bettina to the nurse's office on the ship. When they arrived at the nurse's quarters, the ship's nurse quickly took notice of the severity of the situation and began giving first aid while requesting that a rescue helicopter be called in to transport the couple to the nearest hospital, which in this case would be in Turku, Finland. By 5:48 a.m., the couple had arrived at Turku University Hospital, but unfortunately, Klaus would not pull through, and Bettina was left in critical condition after sustaining similar injuries. While medical professionals fought to save Bettina's life, Finnish detectives took the same helicopter back to the ship to start the criminal investigation, and by 6:30 a.m., they had arrived.
Can I just say how refreshing it is to hear that this was handled in such a timely manner? Like, I feel like all of the cases we've talked about so far have been fumbled in some way by the authorities.
Oh, I totally agree. And I do think that part of this is the fact that it took place on a cruise ship. They knew that they had limited time. And as we get into the story more, I'll talk more about what they did to try to figure out who it may have been. But yeah, I totally agree. And I think it was probably the most refreshing part, if you can even say that, of this tragic story.
I actually would have thought that on a cruise ship, in a way, it would be harder to investigate because I don't know how far into the waters they were, but like, you know, when they have international waters and they're trying to see like whose case it is and everyone, at least in the United States, it's like, it seems like it's always a fight over jurisdiction. So like Morgan said, it's refreshing that it was handled so timely. And I'm actually surprised that something that's in international waters was so smooth.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think part of it that really helps is, remember, the ship left at 10 p.m. and it was set to arrive in Finland at 8 a.m. So it isn't a really long journey. And really, when you're going between Sweden and Finland, I mean, the waters are either going to belong to Sweden or to Finland, right? So I think at this point, with this having happened at, you know, 6 a.m., they were so close to Finland that I don't think it left much room for doubt. But again, totally refreshing. And I'm glad that instead of going back and forth, like whose case is this? Who should be investigating this? You know, they took charge and were like, okay, this is what's going on. We're going to investigate. Now, due to the circumstances, other passengers would be delayed in getting off the ship, and police boats were actually surveying the area to ensure that nothing was thrown overboard. And actually, passengers were only allowed to leave through one exit, one by one. During this time, police were also recording and attempting to document any movement of every single passenger, but they were specifically looking at young men and other people that they had deemed to be suspicious. Initially, police attempted to document every passenger's personal details, but the late arrival, combined with only allowing for one way to exit the ship, it created a ton of congestion, so that unfortunately wasn't able to happen. But by the end, police had approximately 20 different passengers brought into the station alongside Thomas and the scouts that had initially discovered Klaus and Bettina. Of everyone questioned, there was really only one person of interest, an Englishman named Patrick Haley. And he was a person of interest because he was found covered in blood. Now, he told investigators that it was his own blood from a nosebleed the night before, but after being arrested for 2 weeks, which is the maximum that Finnish police can hold somebody without making an arrest, at least in this time, they found out that the blood was actually his when they sent it for DNA testing. Now, initially, and this actually goes back to what you said, Krista, the case should have been assigned to police in Åland, but due to the lack of resources that they had, because Åland is just a small little set of islands, it was actually the Turku and Pori police that were assigned to the case. Now, you guys can imagine the difficult nature of this case. Not only was it a cruise ship, but it was a cruise ship that carried passengers from all different countries. I mean, we already know that Klaus and Bettina, they were from Germany. We had Danish Boy Scouts. We had Finnish passengers, Swedish passengers. So there was such a widespread group of people. And since it wasn't immediately solvable, the investigators were faced with a very difficult and very complicated investigation. Over the next 4 years, investigators would test over 250 samples that they had gathered, along with 2,000 documents relating to the case. Police even tried to track down passengers that they had recorded on video that had left the ship. But again, you can only imagine how difficult this is considering the passing time, people's movement, the fact that they're from different countries, and just the time period in general. I mean, this is the 80s. So I know I've been talking a lot about the investigation, what police have been doing, but you guys are probably wondering about Bettina. Well, luckily, she did actually recover, but she was unconscious for weeks following the attack. And even worse for investigators, after she had regained consciousness, she had zero recollection of the night and the day of the attack.
So it seems that they're definitely lacking the witness accounts. But was there any physical evidence left behind at the scene or anything forensic evidence left behind?
Yeah, so it's tough because we have all those samples that the police had actually found, but nothing came from that. And from my research, I couldn't figure out that, you know, I couldn't figure out if nothing came from it because of the time period and because the limitations that, you know, DNA testing had during that time. But at the end of the day, the only real evidence that investigators had to go off of was a set of clothes that washed up on shore in August of 1987. Now, these clothes, they actually washed up in a black garbage bag. And inside of that bag, there was a Finnish-made shoe, size 7.5, a pair of light-colored shorts, a Finnish-made red wool jumper, and a commonly sold pair of work gloves with the initials HK. Sadly, due to a lack of technology at the time, combined with such a wide variety of other complicating factors that we've discussed, you can imagine the case would go cold. In 2019, Finnish police revealed that they had actually had a prime suspect for the crime, but due to privacy reasons, they were not going to release the suspect's age, sex, or nationality, and only ensured the public that the person was still alive and was not known to the victims.
That's interesting. Is that like a normal European thing to keep the suspect anonymous regardless of age? Because I know in the United States, that would only be for a minor that yeah, they would do that.
Yeah, and that's a really good point and a really good question that you bring up. I'm not 100% versed in European privacy laws, but Europe does have some very strict ones. Even going as far as like, if you've worked at a certain company and you leave that company, you can request a report of all the personal data that they have on you. And you can even request that they delete that information, completely remove it from any system that they have. So Europe in general does take privacy very seriously. And I think maybe because he was a prime suspect and wasn't actually accused of the crimes, they weren't willing to release that information. Or for all we know, maybe they knew who it was, but hadn't actually even disclosed it to the suspect. So I don't know. I think that the privacy laws maybe just combined with how sensitive this case was and wanting to make sure they do everything by the book perfectly, I think that might have played a role in it.
Okay, yeah. Because when I first saw that part, I was like, I wonder if it's a minor, but then I wasn't sure about the different laws. And my first thought was the scouts.
Yeah. Well, you actually might be on something. So in September of 2020, the Turku Police Department had actually announced that they had officially solved the case and they would be passing it over to the prosecutors. The charges that were filed against a Danish man born in 1969. And get this, he is one of the former Boy Scouts who originally discovered the victims.
Are you kidding me? Do they have any information about his motive or anything like that?
So we really don't, or at least we don't know if they do. And I say that because there has been no other information released other than basically everything I've just said. I think that it might be part of the privacy laws that I was talking about earlier. And I also think that maybe the sensitivity of the case and the fact that they just want to make sure that they get it right and get justice for both Klaus and for Bettina, that they might not want to take any risks on releasing information that could potentially harm or discredit the case.
So you said there were three Boy Scouts, so only one has been found guilty?
That's correct, yeah. So as of right now, they said that the suspect, I mean, as far as, you know, the suspect that they're passing over the prosecutors, he is the one who is guilty, and I guess the other two, I'm not sure if they were maybe in on it, or maybe there just wasn't enough evidence there. I'm not sure. This is the only information we really know from my research.
Well, he's not officially found guilty yet. He's just the main suspect, and he still has to be convicted.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, that's a good point. And that was certainly my bad. So originally the case was actually investigated as a manslaughter, but due to the statute of limitations of 20 years, very similar to what we talked about in the Eva Blanco case, prosecutors are actually going to attempt to bring murder and attempted murder charges against the suspect. And the reason they want to do this is because in Finland, murder charges don't carry any sort of statute of limitations, and they can actually still be filed. As of now, the trial is scheduled for the end of this month, May of 2021, and if convicted, this would be Finland's longest offense to conviction in their judicial history, which is absolutely insane.
Yeah, that's really interesting. This is like one of the cases that actually leaves us, like us three, a lot of room to bounce ideas off of each other, because it seems like they had such minimal physical evidence, like some shoes and a sweater, and they still managed to get this Boy Scout like however many decades later. So it makes me wonder if the other two, like if it was festering in them all this time and they finally said something, or
yeah,
or what, because you know, later in life people, they can't hold the secret anymore.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I actually, looking at this case, and again, there's so much information that we don't know, and I really do hope that once the trial happens, and if he is convicted and he is found guilty, I hope that we find out more information, because there's so much missing from this case that I would just, you know, I really want to know. But I almost want to believe that the clothing items that they found in that garbage bag, I almost want to say that that didn't have anything to do with it. And I think that might have just been, you know, a random thing that happened. Maybe not, but it's also hard to say, because I don't know, I guess. Yeah, it's difficult to say because we have such a lack of information. So I'll be really curious to see what happens with this case. And actually, this is our first case that we've covered that is kind of still going on. So we'll definitely be sure to be updating with any updates to this case, and we'll be keeping a close eye on it, because I know you guys are going to want to know what happened just as much as we do.
Was anyone else thinking that Tauno was going to be the person? Because I was like, all right, here we go. There might be alcohol flowing. The stranger is like buttering up this couple, and now it's going to go completely awry. When I saw like they were talking about their interests, I'm like, oh God, this is going to go bad. But then he never even...
I thought the same thing.
We never heard of him again, so that was really surprising.
Well, yeah. When the clothes washed up and it was like finished clothing, I'm like, yep, we got him, red-handed. Yep. Fun fit, lock him up.
yeah. No, I guess I don't know if it didn't cross my mind because I researched the case and, you know, obviously I was so into it, whereas you guys are just hearing it for the first time. I don't know. I think it almost is part of this case more than anything, just to show Klaus's fun nature. But yeah, I don't know. I'm definitely coming into this with a different perspective than you guys are, since I was the one, you know, we each have our cases that we research, and then the other two, it's kind of like a surprise. So yeah, I was shocked when I found out it was the Scouts, though. I really was shocked. And like I said, that's why I can't wait to hopefully hear more information about what happened and what led up to this, because it was not my first thought in the slightest.
Yeah, that's like some Lord of the Flies type thing. Like you're on a boat, there is no way off, and these kids, they just, and they were what? If he was born in 1969 and it was 1987, so that's, okay, so they were like between 15 and 17 years old.
Yeah.
Originally, I'm like, was he 13 doing this?
No, I think that too, until I got to the part where we found out his age and when he was born, that was something I was wondering too, because I was like, I mean, if they're like 13 years old, how are you going to overpower somebody who's in their early 20s? You know what I mean? I mean, anything's possible.
And two people.
Yeah, and two people at that. So yeah, it's actually very interesting. And someday, if you know, if our listeners would like to hear it, and maybe this can be one of our first conspiracy episodes, this ship actually has a lot of very interesting happenings behind it. I didn't mention this to either of you guys, but prior to this murder, this same ship had actually saw one other murder. And then it would later go on to completely sink.
Oh my God. It's like the Cecil Hotel of cruise ships.
Literally.
That's so creepy.
Yeah, it's almost, and some people think that it was cursed because they've changed the name of the ship so many times. But again, that's certainly a story for one of our conspiracy episodes. So if our listeners would like to hear that, definitely let us know on social media. I think it would be a really interesting case to cover. It'd be a little bit different than, you know, a normal true crime case. But yeah, this ship has seen some bad luck over the years, to say the least. Thank you everyone for listening and for joining us for today's story. Like I mentioned earlier, you can actually find all photos and sources for this case on our website, thrilogypodcast.com.
As always, you guys can keep up with all things Thrilogy on social media at @thrilogypod and make story requests on thrilogypodcast.com.
I want to thank everyone so much for your incredible reviews and feedback that you've given us so far on social media. And a special thanks to NZAV94 for your super sweet review on Apple Podcasts. Remember to share a podcast with your friends and family. And of course, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, be sure to rate the show. It really helps us out a lot and allows more people to discover us and all things Thrilogy. Be sure to tune in next Monday for our next episode. Each week, we release two clues leading up to the release of the next episode. So, the first clue is, you seem to be strangers here. Where are you from? Be sure to check out our Instagram for the second clue later this week.